colonizers? Where we're going, we don't need colonizers.
Welcome to the
Ani Bojo Anger Squad, and welcome to the fifth episode of the Angry Indian Girl Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Sophia Syntax. You may remember me from such productions as the Halfway to Halloween Monster Boo Less Spooktacular and the Halfway to Halloween Monster Boo Less Spooktacular 2. We are recording on Friday, May 21st, 2021, during the 21st hour of the 21st day of the 21st week of the 21st century. So we should probably make a wish or something. We're also on Patreon at patreon.com/SophiaSyntax, SophiaSyntax. We'd love for you to join us there and help support the show. Or not, that's great too. We honestly just love to radicalize our comrades. Grab your headphones, a tasty snack, your favorite beverage, and settle in because the show starts now. In this episode, in honor of the science fiction holiday that passed this month, cough, cough, may the 4th be with you, cough, we're going to talk about indigenous futurism, what it is, why it's important, and where to find it. As an Anishinaabe person growing up in the 1990s, it was often difficult for me to see myself represented in mainstream media. I think this is a big reason why I was initially drawn to indigenous futurisms, because it gave me an opportunity to see myself and other BIPOC people centered in fantastic stories about an alternative future. First of all, let's talk about what indigenous futurism is and why it's important, not only for Native American and First Nations people, but also pop culture as a whole. Too often, Indigenous people are historized and placed in the past without imagining what the future would look like with them in it. But Indigenous futurism is set to change that. It's a method of storytelling that looks to the past in order to inform the present and future realities. Simply put, Indigenous futurism is a field of literature, art, and other expressions that roots Indigenous presence in the future, removing the stereotypical historization of Indigenous peoples from the present. Grace Dillon coined the term in the early 2000s to describe a new way of imagining the worlds of science fiction. Science fiction has long been criticized for its lack of racial diversity and inclusion. How can a genre that imagines a future of infinite possibilities be seemingly unable to imagine a future where people of color exist, or at least have any relevance? Dillon developed the term to empower and encourage Native American, First Nations, and other Indigenous authors and creators to speak back to the colonial tropes prevalent in the genre. Exploring the various ways in which Indigenous people are using their own technological traditions via their worldviews, languages, stories, and kinships serves as the guiding principles in imagining possible futures for Indigenous communities and their members. This is being done in a variety of ways, including but not limited to video games and digital media, literary works, comics, and the visual arts. Much of the existing works within science fiction idolizes rugged individualism, the conquest of foreign worlds, and the taming of the final frontier. Indigenous futurism calls us to reject these colonial ideas and instead reimagine space, both outer and inner, from another perspective, one that makes rooms for stories that celebrate relationship and connection to community, coexistence, and sharing of land and technology, the honoring of caretakers and protectors. Indigenous futurism also advocates for the sovereign. Indigenous creators are tasked to define themselves and their world not just as speaking back to colonialism, but also as existing in their own right. Not to say that the past is ignored, but rather that it's folded into the present, which is folded into the future. A philosophical wormhole that renders the very definitions of time and space fluid in the imagination. Examples of artists working within the field of Indigenous futurism include Wendy Redstar, a Native American contemporary multimedia artist, and Elizabeth LaPonce, a game designer and professor of Native American studies at Michigan State University. Speaking of Elizabeth LaPonce, whose work I greatly admire, I'd like to discuss a few of the games she has developed. It's my hope that in future episodes of the Anger Podcast, we'll be able to do interviews, and Elizabeth is definitely someone who I'd love love to have on the show. First, I want to touch on her game, Where Rivers Were Trails, which is an indigenous reimagining of the Oregon Trail. Yes, the same Oregon Trail that we all love to play during elementary school computer lab. When Rivers Were Trails depicts a myriad of cultures during the player's journey from Minnesota to California amidst the impact of land allotment in the 1890s. It's available to play for free on PC and Mac now. Check it out and tweet at Anger Podcast to tell us about your experience. Next, I want to talk about Thunderbird Strike, which one Minnesota senator described as the eco-terrorist version of Angry Birds. Y'all, the fallout and controversy and harassment that Elizabeth had to endure surrounding this game was unreal. I couldn't believe it, and I felt genuinely scared for her safety while it was happening. The game won the Best Digital Media Award at the 2017 Imaginative Festival, but the win was clouded by accusations that the game put lives at risk. Let me pause for dramatic effect here as I think about other way more violent video games. Yes, I'm looking at you, Grand Theft Auto franchise. No disrespect to the senator, but I could not roll my eyes hard enough at that comment. So let's talk about the game itself. Thunderbird Strike is a 2D side-scrolling game where players control a Thunderbird, which can fly from the oil sands to the Great Lakes, and players have the choice to either gain points by letting the Thunderbird take lightning strikes at oil industry machinery, things like vehicles, buildings, and pipelines, or they can strike at the bones of caribou, wolves, buffalo, and even people to restore them back to life. In the final scene of the game, players battle a pipeline snake that represents the line underneath the Mackinac Bridge in the Great Lakes. There's a fantastic quote from the CBC from La Ponce that I'd like to share with you now. She said, "I was very concerned about and listening to the stories of my community members and storytellers and elders regarding there becoming a time when there will be a snake that threatens to swallow the land and the waters whole." So Thunderbird Strike really does reflect the stories of community members. I've actually been working on this for a couple of years. I think part of it is that I was looking at the connections between the tar sands in Alberta all the way to Line 5, which is underneath the Mackinac Bridge. Because I'm Anishinaabe and also Métis, and a lot of my family's in Sault Ste. Marie. Sounds like a nice culturally informed game, right? Well, Minnesota senators and the oil lobbyists came for La Ponce. They questioned her work and tried to get her grants revoked. It was terrible. I bring this up not to spread malicious gossip, but to highlight the very real hurdles and threats that Indigenous creators face, not only in getting their content made, but also in how their projects are received once they come to fruition. But I digress. Like other great social movements in this decade, the move to dismantle the colonial mindset using the tools of Indigenous futurisms began with a tweet. Damian Lee, an assistant professor in the Department of Indigenous Studies at the University of Saskatchewan, proposed a simple linguistic shift in how we talk about the future, opting to move away from saying Canada, or even in what is now Canada, to in what is currently Canada, in order to open up possibilities for imagining futurities beyond the settler's state. Interesting. I think I'm going to try it out. The long-term exclusion of people of color from science fiction offers up an interesting paradox. Thus, I believe it's also important to consider Afrofuturism in conjunction with Indigenous futurisms. Afrofuturism is an umbrella term for the black presence in sci-fi, technology, magic, and fantasy, coined in 1994 by a culture critic named Mark Derry, although the idea has existed for much longer. The term has become a cultural catchphrase of sorts used to describe the world of tomorrow today in music, art, theater, politics, and academics. The Afrofuturist Project is a grassroots community formed to celebrate, strengthen, and promote Afrofuturistic and sci-fi concepts and culture through creative events and creative writing. They describe Afrofuturism thusly, quote, "Whether you call it mythology, ghost stories, cosmology, parable, folktale, sci-fi, religious tale, or fantasy, people of color have always contemplated their origins in the same breath that they anticipated the fate of humankind," end quote. There are tons of great works in the Afrofuturism genre, but the one that probably comes to mind most immediately for most people is Black Panther. On the off chance you haven't heard of it, Marvel Studios' Black Panther features an Afrofuturistic superhero in a world where black people have the most advanced technology on Earth. The blockbuster movie broke several records, including highest grossing film of 2018, the third highest grossing film in the United States, and the 10th highest grossing film of all time. It is currently also the most tweeted about movie of all time, according to Twitter Movies. Both Afrofuturism and Indigenous futurisms have the potential to be used as a tool of empowerment by their respective cultures, or indeed in tandem, and push past limitations imposed by colonial powers. Herein lies the power and importance of reframing the narrative and of the indigenous futurism and Afrofuturism movements. Both signal 20th century technoculture at the same time that it gestures toward a dark colonial past, constantly bubbling up in the present in nefarious modes of racism, as well as the imagination of possible futures. Janelle Monáe, who is regarded by many as the queen of contemporary Afrofuturism, cites the movement as the inspiration for her new narrative film, Dirty Computer, a motion picture, a visual accompaniment to her latest album, which trended on YouTube. The 44-minute film, starring and produced by Janelle, tells the story of Jane 57821, a woman who's on the run from a totalitarian government that seeks to wipe her memories. The film features minority groups who are under threat, including people of color and LGBTQ individuals. In an interview with BBC Radio 1, Monáe said, "Telling these stories through the lens of a young black woman and speaking of a future where we're included, we're not the minority, but we're the heroines, we're the leaders, were the heroes, I felt like I had a responsibility to do that." The importance of these movements comes not just from the ability to connect people of indigenous and African descent to their origins, but also to each other. It may not be possible to rectify an entire history of exclusion, but the impact of these movements, born from attempts to answer important questions, is something that cannot be ignored. Before we get into this episode's spotlight, I want to give a shout out to the Not So Serious Book Club, which is the book club I belong to. Currently, we're participating in the Read Harder Challenge, which encourages readers to push ourselves to expanding our horizons and breaking out of set reading habits, the hope being that you'll discover voices, settings, characters, formats, and more that you wouldn't have encountered without that push. We're currently in week 10 of the challenge, the theme of which is to read a science fiction anthology edited by a person of color. The group picked New Suns by Nisi Schwal. I've only seen their name written, I've never heard it pronounced, so my apologies if I got that wrong. The book has been great. So far, my personal favorite was the short story, The Virtue of Unfaithful Translations, because I'm a linguist and a polyglot, and I can't say more without ruining the story, so just check it out. I got it from my local library. My pick for this challenge was Love After the End, which is an indigenous queer collection of dystopias and utopias, all own voices stories, but I've really enjoyed New Suns, and I'm going to read Love After the End anyway, so win-win for me. Miigwech, Not So Serious Book Club. This brings me to our Anishinaabe Mauin word of the episode. This episode's word is Agendan, which means read it. Depending on the context, Agendan can also mean count it, so y'all get a twofer this time around. That's Agendan, Agendan, read it. I should also note that this is an imperative or command form of the verb. In Anishinaabe Mauin, there are three types of imperatives or three modes of imperative: the immediate imperative, the delayed imperative, and the prohibitive imperative. The immediate imperative is used to give commands which must be executed immediately. The delayed imperative expresses commands which must be executed in some future time. The prohibitive imperative expresses prohibitive, don't do commands. So when we say agenda, we are using the immediate imperative, which means read it now, get on it. Which brings me to our spotlight. We've already talked about some notable names and titles in the indigenous futurism genre, but I want to recommend a few more. If you'd like to learn more about indigenous futurism than what I've covered in today's show, I recommend checking out another podcast called the Indigenous Futures Podcast. They did an episode where they interviewed Grace Dillon herself, and it was both delightful and insightful to listen to. My book club also read A Lassoway by Darcy Little Badger, which I especially enjoyed because it features an asexual protagonist and a platonic friendship between a boy and a girl. 8 out of 10, would recommend. The final story I'd like to highlight today is The Marrow Thieves by Cherie Demoline. Again, I'm sorry if I get these names wrong. I'm doing my best. The Marrow Thieves is set in a futuristic world ravaged by global warming. People have lost the ability to dream, and the dreamlessness has led to widespread madness. The only people still able to dream are North America's indigenous people, and it is their marrow that holds the cure for the rest of the world. But getting the marrow and the dreams means death for the unwilling donors. Driven to flight, a 15-year-old and his companion struggle for survival, attempt to reunite with loved ones, and take refuge from the recruiters who seek them out to bring them to the marrow-stealing factories. Anger Squad, this book devastated me. I don't want to say anything more for fear of ruining the story, but just, it was so good. I gave it 5 stars on Goodreads, and I almost never give out 5 stars. But this book was just bloody brilliant. Before I give you my final thoughts, I'd like to take a moment to say Miigwech to all of our supporters on Patreon, and to give a shout out to Naomi, our newest patron. Thank you for joining. We appreciate you. Because of the support we've gotten on Patreon, I was able to launch our website and blog this month. You can check it out at angrpodcast.com. It's a work in progress, but I'm doing everything on the site myself, and I feel really proud about that. I'd love for you to take a look and give me any feedback you have about the user experience. Let me know if all the links are working or not. You can email me, tweet, send up a smoke signal, whatever. I'm around. So, without further ado, let's dive into the TLDR portion of the program. Here are my final thoughts on Indigenous Futurism. Much of the existing works within science fiction idolize rugged idealism, the conquest of foreign worlds, and the taming of a final frontier, all holdovers from colonizer culture. Indigenous futurism and Afrofuturism allow for an alternative perspective which honors and uplifts the ideals of connection to community, coexistence, and the sharing of land and technology. The past is not ignored, but rather folded into the present, which is folded into the future, to create a philosophical wormhole. Indigenous people are becoming more visible within futurism genres and continue to shift the paradigm one creative project at a time. Be sure to share today's show with the sci-fi lover in your life and help us get the word out. Miigwech, miinwa, miiwi. Thank you, and that's all.